I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode, maybe not all new, of Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast at Two True Freaks presentation. I am Andrew Leyland, and as ever, I am joined by the two bestest guys to be trapped in the Alpha Quadrant with, not the Delta Quadrant, because that would be Voyager, Mr. Doctor, Professor, Shepherd, Bill Robinson.
Oh, I'm so in love with you.
And the mighty Paul Spataro.
I almost feel inadequate next to that introduction for Bill.
Well, you're not a Dr. Professor Shepherd.
I am not.
And for this very special episode, about a very special episode, we are joined by a very special guest, Mr. Blaine Dowler.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
It's all right. It's not like we had to call you back from the last recording, which was many, many months ago, and not just 2 minutes ago. This week, we're looking at an episode that I think will divide opinion, unless everyone's opinion is this was a big bag of shit. Fascination, which is the Deep Space Nine episode we'll be looking at today. This is apparently episode season 3, episode 10, directed by Avery Brooks with a teleplay by Philip Lasbnik and a story by Ivor Stephen Burt and James Crocker. But before any of that, do we have any Star Trek news?
We saw the movie, we liked it.
Yep, and we covered Star Trek news about Star Trek Beyond's worldwide screening at the end of last week's episode. Thanks to Blaine, who knew all of that stuff.
I didn't see the Star Trek movie.
Oh, Bill didn't see the Star Trek movie and therefore has no opinion on it.
No, okay. That's not true. Bill has had opinions on movies he hasn't seen before.
And I wasn't with you guys when you saw Beyond, but I enjoyed it.
None of us were together.
No, which is a shame. But yeah, I very much enjoyed it as well. I went to see a Star Trek movie. Kel, surprise, I got a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, I would agree.
Maybe I'll see it this weekend. Maybe.
I would say if it's gotten to the discount theaters where you don't have to pay that much, then you're not even risking that much, except other than your time. And I think you may enjoy this one. I think you may be surprised.
Andy, yeah. If I have a choice between this and Suicide Squad, which one should I see?
Star Trek.
Okay.
I agree. Having seen both and having just reviewed Suicide Squad recently with Andy, I agree.
Star Trek Beyond is just a better film across the board. If you listen to Is It Jaws, you'll hear what we thought of Suicide Squad, but Star Trek Beyond is a thoroughly entertaining movie with just enough mind food to chew on, like the best episodes of the original show, and a cast that has finally gelled in such a way that I wasn't thinking about Shatner and Nimoy while I was watching it, and it's got an utterly magnificent score by Michael Giacchino. Great special effects as well, especially the Yorktown space station. Love that.
And Scotty's character totally gets a lot more screen time.
Yep.
But we knew that was coming when we found out the actor was writing it. So.
What a shock. But all right, then, if we've got nothing else, should we go straight into this episode, seeing as one member of our illustrious panel today is strapped for time? That would be me. So, Fascination.
When an outbreak of passion sweeps through the station,
my ears tingle at the sight of you.
The crew can't resist their own hidden desires.
We have to stop.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I've already told you wrote and directed it. Synopsis is from Wikipedia because I'm a lazy bastard by and large and couldn't be bothered writing my own. The crew of Deep Space Nine is preparing for the Bajoran Gratitude Festival. As Major Kira is getting ready to perform the opening ceremony, she becomes distracted by the arrival of her boyfriend, Vadik Barail. Chief O'Brien welcomes his wife Keiko back to the station after a trip to Bajor. Loaxana Troi arrives. Yay! And begins looking for Odo, claiming to have developed feelings for him since the last time she was aboard the station. As the festival gets underway, Loaxana suffers strange headaches that mean Odo isn't getting some, that come and go. Each time she experiences one, the people around her seem momentarily disorientated and then experience a lust for another co-worker, friend or acquaintance. Those infected include Jake Sisko, who professes his love for Major Kira, who can blame him, Vedic Barile, who pursues Jadzia Dax, who can blame him, and Dax herself, who attempts to seduce Commander Sisko because she wants a promotion. Major Kira and Julian Bashir seem to be the only people who are affected, so that their lust is requited. Barile goes on to propose marriage to Dax. She becomes annoyed that he is distracting her from a pursuit of Sisko, and as a result punches him. When Quark arrives with the catering and bumps into Loaxana, who is having another headache, he is also affected. He grabs Keiko as she walks in and insists that she be his love. Everyone then realizes Loaxana, a telepathic betazoid, is affecting them somehow. Bashir cures what she has, which is the Xanti fever, which has been mentioned nowhere in this synopsis elsewhere, an illness that makes her project her amorous impulses onto the people surrounding her. He announces that everyone else should return to normal soon. Meanwhile, the two who belong together, the O'Briens, have made up, hey, and enjoying each other's company again. The end of Fascination. This one is generally regarded to be quite piss poor if you do a review over the internet. It's not as awful as the internet says it is, which is not to say it is in any way good. It's carried purely by the performances of the actors, who are all exceptionally good and clearly having fun playing these different relationships. Sisko is particularly embarrassed by Jadzia throwing herself at him. Jake is all over Major Kira, which is amusing in a number of aspects. And Kira and Bashir also seem to be having a lot of fun, and this led to them having a real-life child. But as a whole, it's quite a weak take on menopause, and Loaxana isn't quite as irritating as she was on Next Gen, but it's still not great, is it?
No.
It's not great. It's an understatement.
It almost feels like it was... It almost feels like it was an unused Next Gen script.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
It feels like it was a used Next Gen script. I mean, okay. Andy just said, you know, it's a take on menopause. This one's not a take on menopause. This is a disease that only affects the older Betazoids. When she was on Next Generation and going through the equivalent of menopause and projecting her amorous feelings on other crew members then, that's when it was a Next Gen episode.
Well, this reminded me of the Next Gen episode where Surak comes and has a disease, and he's getting all the crew stirred up, and everybody's getting, because he's projecting his emotions onto everybody else as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is...
The acting was good, like you guys said, and
apart from Philip Anglin as Barile,
I disagree with the acting being so good. I didn't think the acting was that strong in this one by anybody.
I would rather see two trees have sex than watch him act.
Two Ents got wood.
Yeah, he's good at stoic. He's not so good at emoting. I mean, I could see why Avery Brooks was interested in directing this episode, because as an actor, you know, you can see this, hey, this is a chance to show range, it's a chance to help my fellow cast members show range. I could see why I would excite him as a director, but this is one of the most disappointing episodes I've seen. I was never a fan of Loaxana on Next Gen.
Nobody
Loaxana was. Troi on Next Gen felt like a 13-year-old boy in a grown woman's body who didn't truly understand the difference between lust and romantic love. And I was never looking forward to her until her first episode on Deep Space Nine, where by the time Odo has gone through his regeneration cycle in her lap, they've added depth and made me think that, you know, she might have been more like Al from Quantum Leap, where that first relationship she had with Deanna's father was true love, and now she's just put up shields and pretending to be this flighty, shallow person to protect herself from getting that hurt again. So I was looking forward to seeing them work on the depth that they started with her, and then we don't get that. We just get that, you know, the woman who's denying her age and all this all over again with a story we've already seen. I mean, it wasn't at a complete loss. I love the fact that it's Quark who gives O'Brien the push he needs by saying, and out of your life, right? When O'Brien says, you know, the love of my life just walked out of the bar, Quark says, and out of your life, you know he's giving O'Brien the push he needs to fix that relationship. So I like the fact that we see that, yeah, Quark cares. That's why he's such a successful bartender. He recognizes this. I also liked how nonchalantly Sisko was able to fend off Burrell's physical attack at the end, and you know he's almost passively not paying attention, just deflecting the punches, which makes sense when you've got a trained military officer in a fist fight with, you know, a priest who's going for nonviolent solutions. Burrell should stand no chance, and he's totally outclassed. The rest of this episode,
wardrobe on female
cast members was also worthwhile, but that's that's where it ends.
Yeah, I thought that Avery Brooks' performance in the episode was good. I thought the embarrassment that he showed over what Dax was doing, and as you said, that scene with Burrell, I thought that was all terrific. I thought his acting in the episode was good, and considering that he only had himself to depend on as a director, it speaks for him as an actor a little bit, because he didn't have somebody to say, hey, you're going over the top or whatever. He just, you know, instinctively knew how to play the part. I thought Burrell was horrible in playing his role. He sounded like a whiny little shit, to be honest with you. And I thought everybody else kind of went a little too over the top, trying to say, oh, I'm being mesmerized by this love. And they really just got very, very hammy in their performances. I didn't think anybody else other than Avery Brooks gave what I would consider to be a good performance in this episode.
Yeah, well, the only reason I bought a little bit of Vedic Burrell is because I have a hard time not understanding why everyone's not falling over Dax, but that's me.
Well, the scene with Sisko and Burrell at the fight, we should have seen Sisko just putting his hand on Burrell's head, holding him back, and Burrell just swinging his arms, trying to hit him.
That would have been fitting.
That's about as effective as he was. But I don't know. I thought Dax was pretty good. That she wasn't quite as hammy. That you didn't know that she had really been affected, and then suddenly she pounces on Sisko, and yeah, he's like, yeah.
I like some of the character stuff, like the implication here that they had to have a latent fascination, no pun intended, with the person of the lust, the object of the lust. So the idea that Jake does have a bit of a crush on Kira, I totally bought that.
And I thought for an actor of his age, I thought he played that pretty good.
Hmm.
I mean, because who knows, maybe he actually did. It's not really acting, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I do get why a teenage boy would be, you know, easily able to convince you he's attracted to Nana Visitor's Kira, to Terry Farrell's Dax, to, you know, that. I mean, we don't have Chase Masterson or Nicole DeBora on here yet, but any of the four, any teenage boy who's also heterosexual or homosexual female or bisexual, anything, you'd buy that they're attracted to any of those four.
Middle-aged man.
I didn't have a problem with the premise that they were attracted to. I had a problem with them writing it into the script, or writing a script about it, just because, as you said, it's just, I this whole episode I kept thinking, and I wasn't really even thinking about the episodes where they specifically did this particular plot, but I was thinking it just seems so formulaic and been there, done that, just nothing, no new ground being broken at all. From a positive point of view, and I do try to always see if there's some positive in here, I did start to ask myself, hey, is O'Brien acting this way because he loves his wife, or is he being influenced by all of this? And then they do answer that question later in the episode. On the other hand, I thought Keiko was acting somewhat irrationally. She was acting more like she was being influenced somehow. And the resolution as far as she went seemed to be overly simplified to me. But, you know, yeah, that's it. I don't have a lot of positives on this one.
No, I felt some of the marriage stuff between O'Brien and Keiko was well played. And I think we've all been in conversations that become arguments for no reason. So that felt a little bit realistic. And O'Brien's the everyman, so his plot was quite interesting going throughout it. But it doesn't come together very well.
No, not at all, I didn't think. And, you know, I also agree, Blaine, with what your point was earlier about, you know, that we did see some growth with what's her name? You know, in that last episode with Odo and everything. And for her to come back and just be the same character again is very disappointing. You know, they finally showed us a little something with her, and it's just such a waste.
What was the name of this festival again?
Festival!
Festival!
the to celebrate
gratitude festival. So it's Thanksgiving, basically, isn't it?
What was it?
And it aired in November. So
yeah, but what was the name of it again?
Yeah, the gratitude festival.
Gratitude. Yeah, and they're burning scrolls.
Yeah. So you, I mean, to give them credit, I did feel gratitude when the episode was over.
Oh, this is tough.
That's my fiance and I are about halfway through season 4 in our rewatch, and I rewatched both of these episodes before coming in to record, you know, Defiant and Fascination, but I was really tempted to just watch Defiant and pack it in.
Yeah, well, I'm not, you know, this episode didn't really have much in the way of depth to it, so I'm not sure a rewatching would give you anything more to comment on. There's just not really a lot going on here. You know, it should have made me appreciate Defiant more, because at least that had a little something going, but then I still walked away from the two of them not happy with either.
Yeah.
Even less happy with this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone's going to try to change your mind this time.
No. Like Blaine said, the dresses were nice on the women.
Did we have a Morn sighting here, too,
yep.
Didn't we? I don't think we had one last episode, though.
See, now, I would have liked it if somebody was madly in love with Morn in the episode. That could have made for some good comic relief, at least.
Morn would have been in love with Quark.
The other thing I found interesting was the fact that, you know, with Kira and Bashir, that for whatever reason it hit them mutually. So they were the only ones without conflict in their crazed emotional state. Yeah. You know, how they never got to the point where they were naked, I don't know.
Yeah, TV ratings board.
Yeah, I mean,
standards and practices notes.
Yeah, they were making out pretty hot and heavy. You would think at some point the clothes are coming off.
That was later in the trailer.
And then they married each other.
Yeah, and that was another nice point of the episode, that the touch at the end where, you know, Bashir said everyone else should be fine in a day or two, and all, if you excuse me, I told Kira I'd meet her, and Sisko just kind of stands in his way and says, you know what, maybe you should postpone that for a day or two.
This one just didn't have that much going for it, so I don't think we have a lot more to discuss on it.
Well,
unless anybody else has
one
got
of the,
any points in it.
Well, one of the notes I read is that they wanted a light episode because they knew they were next time that they're going to be going into a pretty heavy episode, and they wanted to lighten it up a little bit. So that's hence why we got this. You know, one of the reasons we got this episode.
That's fine. Yeah. And when we get that light episode that's entertaining, I'll let you know.
I actually had the same comment in the email I wrote you guys.
Okay, well, once again, it's time to hear what does Blaine say.
Blaine says.
So, what hi, would
guys.
Blaine say?
Oh, hey, Loxana Troy is back. While I'm sure fanfic writers will love the combinations and opportunities this presents, I find myself less and less interested in this rewatch in the episodes that don't contribute at least something to the long-term story. While it's nice to see that family is more important on DS9 than on other series with the Siskos, the O'Briens, etc., this is an episode that should have repercussions beyond the end of the hour, which just don't happen. While I'm sure Andy has Jake's and Bashir's backs in their choices here, I've always been a Dax man myself, especially when Season 7 rolls around. Writing this after having watched the entire season, I get why they wanted the light episode before the upcoming two-parter, but mind control or mind alteration stories never feel to me like they should be light episodes. This just feels a little too TNG and not enough DS9 for me to really get on board with it.
I think that pretty much synopsizes what we've been saying since we started discussing this one, so I don't think you're getting any argument on that one. For what it's worth, we have your email on past tense part one. We don't have any past that.
Yeah, I recognize that. That's going to be part of my day today, is sending you more.
And we look forward to it, because what would Blaine say is an integral part of the show now.
As long as well as debate Dr. Bill.
I prefer pummel Dr. Bill. Maybe next time. Anyway, do you want to get to some ratings on this one?
Do we really want to do that?
I think we do.
Now, just to be clear before we get started, these have to be positive numbers, right?
No. Zero is not technically a positive number.
Zero is not true. Technically a number.
It is.
Isn't it an integer?
But integers are numbers, Bill. Numbers.
No.
Pummel him.
Say it so.
It's a whole number. It is an integer. It is a rational number. It's a real number. It's a complex number.
How can zero be rational? It's nothing.
It can be expressed in the form of an integer over a natural number. Therefore, it is a rational number, a member of the set that's usually denoted with a capital Q because R was already taken for the real numbers, where the real numbers were named after professional mockery when they were first introduced to the squares of negative numbers. So many mathematicians had a difficult time accepting the concept that they were literally putting in writing, you guys can work with those imaginary numbers if you want to. We work in the real numbers, which is how those two sets got named. It is not irrational because it can be expressed as a rational number. Said it's complex because it is part of the complex plane where you've got real numbers and imaginary numbers combined. It's a quadrinion. It's the additive identity. And yes, you started this conversation with a math teacher who has over 80 university level math textbooks that I have just because I like to read them for fun.
And despite the fact that it sounds like Blaine was reading that, he is on the Skype window and we could see him, and that was all off the top of his head.
Yeah. It is also the only finite number with an infinite number of factors.
Oh, I'm sorry, there was a squirrel in here. What was that?
and that is Bill's rebuttal.
A number is considered a factor of another integer if you can say that that integer, the dividend, can be expressed as a quotient times a divisor plus a remainder where the remainder is zero, because every number or zero can be expressed as, you know, a zero dividend, or zero is the dividend, that can be expressed as zero quotient times whatever divisor you want plus a zero remainder. Zero is divisible by every integer, so it has infinitely many divisors, even though it is a finite number.
You said there wouldn't be maths.
Get off my leg, I don't have any peanuts. Get out of here, you little squirrel.
I want to talk about something I'm excited about in this episode about fascination. We need something here.
Okay, I gotta say,
I found that more fascinating than the episode, I have to admit.
So we could express this episode as a zero.
You can, you're free to do it however you choose, but it is Blaine's episode, so...
I actually believe it's Andy's episode.
Oh, no, that's right. Blaine did the last episode. I'm sorry, Andy.
One is the loneliest... No, I've been waiting for that.
Andy gave it double the score I'm going to give it. 0.5. Rescued from zero because of that quark moment and the physical attack and that one joke.
And the dress.
Yeah, dress is, actually.
All right.
Yeah, with Terry Farrell and Rosalind Chow.
Doctor?
I'm going to go with a one as well.
And that means Blaine is our low liar on this one, because I'm going one as well. I think it was virtually without anything positive to say about it, or close to it. And one is a pretty poor score. I think that may be as low as we've ever gone. Taking a quick look here, we got
lower than Alan Moraine.
Long Home got two ones. Culis got 1-1. Melora got 2-1s. And this is the first. This is the lowest rated episode ever on average, because 3 ones and 1.5 average to less than one. No other episode averages to less than one.
Yeah, it's 0.75, I believe.
No.
Let me check. Yeah. This is the risk.
Because you're
0.5,
you're not zero.
Yeah. So that would be, well, no,
3.5 divided by 4.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, that should be 0.825 then, or 0.875.
Ooh, I feel like I out-mathed you then.
Yeah, you weren't up at 330. Yeah, 0.875.
I'll take what I can get. All right. So, that's it for Fascination. You wanted to do a couple of emails before we call it a day?
Yeah.
Captain. Incoming message.
And Andy read the episode synopsis, so...
my ironclad contract...
I'll do the first one, again.
I don't have the site up. Which one is it?
First one is, once again, from Gene Hendricks. It's titled Religion and Politics in Star Trek. And once again, Gene leaves Bill out. Andy and Paul, one of the interesting things that I found about the Collaborator is that you have Vedic Barile essentially throwing himself on his sword in order to save memory of the former Kai, rather than worry about what will come if Vedic Wynn becomes Kai. It shows a very interesting personality flaw, I think. Rather than worrying about the future, Barile is more concerned with the past. Even if he became Kai, after the events shown here, he would probably be out in his garden rather than dealing with the affairs of state, which would have led to some conflict in the stories. It's an interesting play between two extremes of the Bajoran Church, and I like how Kira is shown to be very honorable by actually going through with the investigation. but it wasn't a great episode. It kept my interest, but only in the fact that I knew where it was going, but had forgotten how it got there. To Andy's point on the guest stars that became almost regulars, that's a wonderful side effect of the premise of the show. When you have a starship where you're visiting a new planet every week, you can't really introduce anyone who would come back unless they're also a member of the crew or their significant other. Here, though, we have a show based on a specific location where people come and go from it as needed. That means you have much more leeway in rotating guests on and off. This ability, along with the great core cast and story arcs, is what makes DS9 such a great entry into Star Trek. Gene. It's thought-provoking about Vedic Barayel, because I hadn't really considered his wanting to avoid conflict so much, and the fact that he wants to avoid conflict even at the expense of the future, which really kind of takes it to another level that I hadn't really considered. So, yeah, I agree, Gene. That's really positive, really solid thought on the episode. I think you're probably right that they could have mined that for some interesting conflict had they not gone with Vedic Wynn becoming Kai. On the other hand, I can't argue with the decision to make Vedic Wynn Kai, because I think that creates some great conflict down the road.
Yeah, it's worse for Bajor, but makes the show better.
Exactly. Anybody else have their email open?
Yeah, I've got it. I'll do Mark Camphausen's.
So you're taking Bill's slot?
Yeah.
Since Sorry. You technically don't have to read anything.
Thank you, Andy.
It's all right. It's no worries.
Anytime, Bill. I've been grooming him on Battlefront, so he owes me.
He's saving my ass on Battlefront. I did have a jetpack. I fell off Cloud City. I followed Bill, who did this thing where he pretended to commit suicide. He didn't tell me that he'd landed on a platform below, and I followed him and plummeted to my doom. Thanks, Bill.
I go, I regret nothing! And I'm like, Andy, where are you? And then I see him like, fly by. Whoops.
It's like my life as a podcaster. I followed Bill and I just crashed to the surface.
I followed Bill and died. Cheers, mate. Anyway, the email is from Mark Camphausen. Hello, Andy and Paul, and Bill. I'll just tag that on the end there.
Well, I wasn't around at that time.
That's true. I hope this email finds you well. As of my writing this in mid-July, I've listened to your review Season 2, The Collaborator, just last weekend. I jumped a couple of episodes ahead in the hope of catching you guys when you sit down to review this episode, and it is fascination. So that works out really well. I liked the beginning with Jake's girlfriend relocating to Regulus 3. For me, it brought to mind Regular 1 from The Wrath of Khan. I'm not sure if that was a little nod or not. Also, much like classic original series and Next Gen, everyone's off-duty clothes are simply horrible. Seriously, that shirt Dr. Bashir wears makes Wesley's gay pride shirt look fashionable. And Dax looked like she was dressed like a 13-year-old girl in the purple dress. Oh, I think them's fighting words. I can't help but think the wardrobe designers were actively trying to make these outfits look as ridiculous as possible. Did anyone else think when Bashir and Kira were making out in the infirmary they were mimicking Shatner's classic Kirk kissing technique of mashing their heads together and wiping back and forth? Maybe that's just how they like it. In general, I do appreciate episodes that make good use of all their characters, giving everyone something to do. The show has a great cast and great characters, and I like to see them all put to use. René Auberjonois in particular gets to show his comedic side. He can be hysterical with minimal effort. This episode did feature three characters I think I like better than most other Star Trek fans. First, Vedic Barayel. Admittedly, he's a mixed bag, and I can never really decide whether or not I liked him. On the other hand, he's Ben Kenobi to Kai Opaka's Yoda. On the other hand, he looks like the kind of guy who stores child pornography on his computer. In the end, though, he was always trying his best to do the right thing, even if he is a bit dull. Second is Loaxana Troi. It's hard to believe that this is the same Majel Barrett who played number one in The Cage. I would never guess that it's the same actress, which is probably a testament to Majel's acting. I always liked Loaxana for her talent of making everyone else in the room uncomfortable, from Picard to Odo. I admire her ability to screw with people. She usually makes the episodes she's in more interesting, or at least entertaining. And then there's Keiko. I don't think I've ever heard one person say anything good about Keiko, but I really like her. I think she's one of the most human characters on the show, surrounded by all these extraordinary Starfleet types. She's the ordinary every person. Her interactions with Miles always make the scenes between them feel like a real marriage, which I think strengthens the show, and the writers do a good job of not overusing her, in my opinion. All in all, I really liked this episode, but then again, I always had a soft spot for the episodes that are just fun, trying to relax. This is DS9's version of The Naked Time and The Naked Now, and overall, I think it worked well. Thank you guys for a great podcast. Keep up the great work, Mark. Well, we're glad you liked this one, Mark. Maybe you should have rated it for us, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
We thought it was a bit silly.
Yeah, I make a point of not belittling anybody else's opinion, because that's exactly what it is. It's somebody else's opinion. If he saw this and he was entertained by it, more power to you, Mark. I don't criticize anybody for liking something I didn't like. Yeah. But this really do it for me.
Yeah, if you like this one, Mark, good. We're glad that you didn't waste 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the clear goal of this one is comedy, and comedy is so subjective. Some people will love it, some people will not. Especially when you're talking about a show where comedy is not the regular thing. I mean, it's one, if you're looking at Friends or Seinfeld, if that kind of comedy speaks to you, you're going to be there every episode. But when it's something like this that's primarily drama with occasional forays into comedy, it means the writers don't really have a groove. They don't have a sense of the comedy style of this show. So the viewers, it's going to be hit and miss for whether the intentionally comedic ones work for them. I mean, I know people who can't stand The Trouble with Tribbles from the original series.
Yeah, I've heard that opinion as well. I happen to like that one. I think that's an excellent episode. But, you know, some people, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I really think that's important, is to respect other people's opinions, because I'm seeing it so often on the internet now with movie releases. You know, the popular opinion is one way, that something's great or something's horrible, and somebody disagrees, and it's like they're a pariah. And that really bothers me. So
yeah,
you know, the fact that Mark enjoyed this one, good for him.
Yeah, and I will also agree with Mark that Keiko is a better character than she often gets credit for. I think, if anything, the biggest attraction for her is that the time that the writers choose to spend with her is usually when the relationship is tense. So she comes across as more bitchy than she actually is, because we see moments of happy relationships, but most of the time Keiko's in there, it's when she and Miles are in conflict. And I think that's just the moments they've chosen to share rather than the character as a whole. If we had episodes that followed Keiko, I think people would see it in a better light if they were able to come in without the baggage, because I think there is a better character there than we see when, you know, we're coming into these wedding or these marriage conflicts primarily from O'Brien's point of view, you know, which is what we've got here.
She's a minor enough character on the show that they can't dedicate enough time to her to show the other side, the side that actually attracts Miles. And, you know, it's sad that you can't, but you just have to understand that there's something there that we're not seeing.
Well, we did see her in the red dress, so that's a part of it.
There you go. Well, I mean more than just the physical appearance. She's a very pretty woman, and that's, I don't think anybody would really argue with that. But as far as her personality, we don't really see the, you know, the loving, nice Keiko very much.
Yeah, I wish we saw more of the Keiko that was going head-to-head with Kai Winn when she opened the school.
Yeah, because that was a very positive showing of her.
Yeah, and again, that's in the character. It's just not the time the writers are choosing to spend with it. So, yeah, I will agree with people who criticize the way Keiko is written more than I will agree with the people who just criticize Keiko for the sake of Keiko.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Now, our next email is a very long, well-thought-out email that I think is going to inspire some discussion by Chip Mullins. And we're under a little bit of a time crunch, so I don't want to read it and not give it the time it deserves. So Chip, you're gonna get your email in the next episode, I believe. But what is the next episode?
Next time on a moderately new episode of Listen to the Prophet, it's a two-parter. We're going back in time for past tense.
Gotta get back in time.
All right, everyone, look forward to seeing you then. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thanks, Blaine. Bye. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Actually, before we cut off this episode, Blaine, why don't you tell everybody where everybody can find you? Because we haven't done that in two episodes that we've listened to.
We'll fix that in post.
So I've got a few podcasts on the go. So Comic Book Physics runs on the last Wednesday of every month, where I basically teach physics as it's represented in comic books. I've got a bi-weekly X-Files show. I've got monthly movie podcasts. So there's right now it's Silver Screen Superheroes that comes out on the 14th of every month. I'm not sure when this is going to be aired because we do tend to record in advance, but Silver Screen Superheroes will wrap up in December. And then starting in January, I'll have Make Me Watch It, where there's public voting on which movies in my collection that have been sitting there collecting dust that I never watched should be watched and podcasted about, just to help me get through it. Some of them are movies I've heard great things about. Some of them are movies that were part of larger box sets. You know, some of them are movies that I got because, hey, here's a box of 50 movies for $10. Something in there is going to be worth it. So.
Well, I highly recommend that everybody look into those shows because Blaine gives a very good perspective on everything I've listened to so far, and I've enjoyed listening to all the shows that I have at this point. And I still have to catch up on some of them myself, I have to admit. But everybody, seek out Blaine.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.